This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You bitch! No idea how bad it gets.
Sally, I think I'll buy the flowers myself.
But you're not a girl, you're a guy. And why would a guy want to marry a guy?
Don't stomp your little lassies and Prada she's a me, honey.
John Callier, will you go round with me?
Don't fuck with me, fellas!
Oh, I feel so damn sick and dirty, I can't stand it anymore.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Is butter a crumb?
I had a hunch you might be a real romantic.
We were decoys. He used us as bait. We procured for him.
We could have had a good life together. Fucking real good life. But you didn't want it, Ennis. So what we got now is broke right now.
And you're listening to Outtakes here on Joy 94.9, the queerest radio program in the world, in the universe. And this week we're going to be talking all things Melbourne Queer Film Festival. It's the 28th Melbourne Queer Film Festival. Can you believe it? Nearly three decades.
Oh my goodness.
It's almost as old as me.
What's going to happen for the 30th? Okay, but anyway, that's an aside.
Yeah, so it's coming up, 15th to the 26th of March.
Very exciting. And we're very pleased to be joined in this hour by Maxwell Grattan, who is the very new executive director for the festival. He's going to tell us all about his vision, I guess, who he is, and what he's hoping to achieve with our festival. Not that we own it or anything, but
we were a little bit, you know, precious about it, aren't we? A bit protective, and I think we're allowed to be.
So I think it's going to be good to hear from him about, what's he got planned, what's the shape of the future, and making sure our festival is still around for another 28 years to come.
Yeah, stronger and better. And bigger.
And, you know, it's not an MQFF festival without bringing in and interrogating the program manager. So we have brought Spiro in as well to interrogate the selection of films and what we can't miss out on seeing. So that will be great to hear from Spiro.
120 features included in this program. Mm. So not only, you know, it's cheesy, but it's true. Something for everyone. But this guy, you know, blood, sweat and tears to get this thing together. Mm. So I'm looking forward to hearing what his picks are and what he's most excited about.
Mm.
But Conrad, we've done something different because, you know, we like to give our opinion of what we think people should go and see. And we know, you know, Spiro and Maxwell are going to tell us. But Alan and I did something
We're opinionated. Are you trying to say that we like to, you know, give our opinions and say what we think?
We are really? A review show. Wow. But we did something different, didn't we, Alan, at the program launch?
Oh, the program launch was so much fun. I got to pick out the cute boys out of the audience and ask them what they thought. No, seriously. That didn't happen. I really didn't.
We spoke to a lot of lesbians, actually.
Did speak to a lot of lesbians. So we picked some people out of the crowd to actually ask them what excites them about MQFF and what they're hoping to see in this new program and the festival this year.
Robbie, you've got your hot little hands on the MQFF guide. Can I just tell the audience she's not got her hands on the MQFF guide as we said that. When you open up the guide, what are you looking for?
I want to see great lesbian films that don't bloody kill off the lesos this year. We gave them some very serious feedback. We want some happy endings for the lesbians. That's what we want.
So you're just
too much to ask?
I actually think that's the best thing to ask for because, no, we're sick of the dead lesbian syndrome. So you want lesbian, happy, feel-good, romantic comedy?
Yeah, we want a little bit of happy, feel-good, but yeah. I'm also looking to, I like to go and see something totally out of the box, so I love to do that as well. I usually buy my 7 pass and see what happens after that.
So Lisa, you've got the program in your hot little hands. Tell me, what are you anticipating the most?
Oh, well, I'd have have to say, and listen, I'm actually very biased. If you go to page number 49.
Page number 49, not 69, are you sure?
Listen.
Sure it's not 69, 49.
I'm a lesbian, I don't know. Oh, no, actually, no, I'm still in for that. Just the numbers, it's more like 88 in that case. But okay. Nonetheless.
I'll have to get to explain that later.
Well, 88, two chicks, how hard is that to explain?
It's a gay man.
Yeah. Cineman Evolve present all of them witches, the devils in the 60s and 70s cinema. That looks pretty good. Though I'm really interested in a lot of the diverse content here because myself being from a diverse background, a migrant background, I really think it's good when films and programs and festivals reflect that because let's face it, this is an extremely diverse place. So I'm looking forward to exploring the program and exploring the films that touch on those elements too.
But would you feel comfortable going to see gay male films or would you only look through the guide and look for lesbian content?
Not at all. I mean, just as like any film, I will see, I'm Italian, Scottish, my partner's Aboriginal, I will see a film about Africa, I will see a film about Scandinavia, I think that's very important. And listen, that's an interesting topic you pointed on because when we were watching some trailers, someone turned to me and said, oh, that's a lesbian film. about one of the trailers. That's not how you see life, therefore you don't see film like... If ever in my life I'm only seeing films that are only talking to me or representing me, slap me in the face. Definitely you need representation, but I don't think an audience, and that goes for straight, heterosexual, Anglo audiences, they also crave the diversity that festivals like this provide. You need to see yourself, but with everything else, like the world.
Well, one thing that I really love about the Queer Film Festival is the diversity of their films. I also love that they do retrospective screenings. Yes. The thing that's kind of got my attention the most this year is their...
Desert Hearts. Is it Desert Hearts?
No, it's the... I love the documentary. So there's two that have got my eye, which is Mr. Gay Syria. Their Mansfield 66-67 doco, which is about Jane Mansfield's relationship with Anton LaVey, the head of the Church of Satan.
Hi, my name's Jeremy. I'm one of the volunteer liaisons.
That's one of the most important jobs of MQFF Festival, especially organising all those fabulous volunteers. So, well done.
Thank you. Yeah, they're wonderful and they're so much fun to work with. First, I go to the films that I can't see because I have other things on. There's nothing worse than finding a film you love and finding out you can't go to it.
So do you go to the calendar before you go to the...
Absolutely.
Category.
I use the app personally and then I go through the dates and I only look at the films that are on the dates that I can see something. My second thing is to make sure I have some diversity. I always try to see a lesbian film, a gay film, a short film, a funny film, a documentary. You've got to see a cross-section. Look, I probably see between 5 and 10, probably on average about 5 to 6 films each festival. It's just nice to get out there and see a couple of films and enjoy the atmosphere.
Now, if you knew some of these films are maybe on a free-to-air service or you've even got the DVD at home, would you still go and see it with a live audience?
Absolutely. There is nothing like MQFF. There is nothing like it. The environment, the atmosphere, there's just a, what do they call it, a je ne sais quoi, that you cannot replace. The MQFF just delivers year after year. It's wonderful. I look forward to it every year.
The fabulous Granta Kluna, when you get the guide, what do you go to first?
I go nuts about all the trans cinema. I go nuts about all the sort of cinema that I think, I guess, sort of challenges you and makes you think about the world differently. So, yeah, I go straight to trans. I actually go straight to the lesbian cinema. And then, ultimately, like, down wallowing at the bottom is all the gay cinema.
Not down river?
No, that wasn't wallowing at the bottom. That, I think BPM looks fantastic, but I just would encourage people to, like, look deeper, look beyond what your comfort zone is. And that's what is great about this festival and our community. You know, you can see stuff that makes you feel comfortable because you see your own representations on screen, but you can see stuff that, like, you know, excites you and makes you appreciate the people that we put under this umbrella of community. The sense of community around this festival is what's really exciting. You know, God, I mean, how many nights do we sit at home by ourselves with our cats or dogs and, or, you know, partners or, you know, flatmates or whatever, but... Come on, like, you know, this festival runs for 10 days and the joy that comes from sitting in a room of people and watching a film as a collective experience and talking about it afterwards, you don't get that on your couch with your cat.
No.
Lisa, Daniel, you are known for running this festival for 15 years. When you come as an audience member, where do you start with the guide?
Gina, I'm just here to judge. So, no, I don't. No, I'll take the guide home because I need to have it private. I'll take it to bed tonight and I'll go through it. I'll try not to do any proofreading or, you know, cross-check, that sort of stuff. But I'll be getting my highlighter out. I'm a bit of a fan of the highlighter. And I'll be highlighting. Oh, Alaska is a Drag, that's an Australian premiere. We screened the short of that quite some years ago, so that's amazing.
It's only taken 10 years for the poor filmmaker to make the feature film. Right. It's quite common, actually.
Well, I'm going to take responsibility for that. So I'll take it home and I'll carefully highlight, and then I will use my pass very wisely, and I'll go and see as much as I can, because I love the Queer Film Festival, because it's one of the few events in the queer calendar where everybody gets to hang out together.
Yes.
And what I love is that sometimes you turn up and you go into the festival lounge at Acme and you go, oh, what do you think? Oh, nothing, I'm just here to hang out with my gay friends or my trans friends or whatever. And it's always been like that, and it will continue to be like that. So I will take this home tonight and I will take my own advice and pick a couple of sessions I would normally go and see. That's what I used to say a lot. So I will take my own advice.
Are you able to actually relax when you go? No, knowing what goes on in the background and how many films people have had to sit through.
No, because I know what it's like trying to pick, you know, 100 odd films out of thousands, and you know, most
that
of the
you can't
crap.
Unsee.
So, but it's still hard for me to look at queer film, really, because it feels like a bit of a job. Like my partner Claire will say, "Oh, let's watch this queer thing on Netflix." I'm like, "No, I don't want to do that." So I'm kind of queer filmed out still. Biro has put some great films together, so I'll definitely go and see as much as I can. I'll try and go to 5. I've got friends coming out from the Montreal Queer Film Festival that have done their job in Montreal for 20 years, and they never came out when I was the director here, which is really making me angry. But I'll go to a lot of sessions with them because I'll be really proud to show them what we do here in Melbourne and just the event and what Kathy and the team put together.
Your closing speech of MQFF, your last, where you complained about dead lesbian syndrome. This year, I know there's a feature in there that's pretty fantastic. That's going to delight people. I don't think anyone dies in this one.
Is that Bex?
I don't think it's Bex. I think there's a bit of wrestling. It's very culturally diverse. Kathy, can you spill the beans?
Oh, look, I have seen the program but not seen all the films. So not sure I can tell you who lives and who dies. That feels like some sort of, you know, Agatha Christie-esque spoiler. Look, I certainly appreciate the whole, you know, journey that lesbian filmmaking has come. Like, I think we're doing it much, much better. I think there's a lot more happy films. I think in the last couple of years we've seen a lot more lesbian comedies. I think the days of us, you know, mourning and taking our lesbian drama to a whole new level has kind of dissipated a little. I think there's, you know, there's valid to have a little bit of that in there.
There's room for dead lesbians. Come on. Yeah.
So what does the festival do to drive a lesbian audience, a lesbian attendance?
Ah, that's a really good question. What do we do to drive any
audience?
Don't screen
after 8:30 p.m.
A couple of years ago, our former co-convener Alice Murray famously asked all the lesbians to get off the couch and leave the cats at home. General push for all our queer community, if I can be so general as to say. We're not just pushing for a lesbian or a trans audience or a youth audience. This year, I think we're probably going to be interested in having, because of the changes in the marriage equality laws, for our queer community to actually bring an ally. So we've seen the, you know, the phone, the Rello, Ring a Rello campaign that was so successful in marriage equality. I think we can do something very similar here to keep queer cinema as a obviously a foundation event for us. And we talked a lot tonight about our elders of our community, and in that obviously we're talking about people like Lisa who've been with
Oi. Us. Man, I'm over 50.
Yeah, you are. Well, but who've built this festival to be what it is, and it, you know, and it does change and it does evolve, but that doesn't mean that we have to ignore or overlook any certain part of the community, and that includes our straight allies. I find that Bureau has put together such a wonderful program of films, but of course, as you'd be aware, we suffer from the increasing issue of streaming films and the Netflix factor and that kind of thing.
We've asked everyone tonight if they saw it on free to air and in the guide, would they go? Of course they would, because they want to see it with their community.
And I think in terms of family friendly films, on our tax we love to queer Disney films, and in fact in our world,
like
every
Frozen.
Disney film is queer, and Frozen is the queerest Disney film out there. So I think, can we possibly have a Disney film next year?
Yeah. Maybe we should dub it and take it, give it like a cinema fiasco kind of feel.
Yeah,
and
just give everyone a mic as they go in.
Yeah.
They can just do their own thing.
Yeah. I think that's fabulous.
Oh, I think I love this.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Enjoy MQFF. We will.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Outtakes here on Joy 94.9 with Conrad, Gina and Alan. And we're here with our very special guest for our MQFF special, the 28th year of the Melbourne Queer Film Festival. So we went straight to the top to find out what's going on with the festival. He's new to the role, but he's got obviously quite a big vision for what is coming up in 2018 and beyond. We're speaking with Maxwell Grattan, the Executive Director for MQFF.
We are big fans of MQFF. We've done this many times, but this is your first MQFF in this role.
No, thank you very much for having me on the show today, and I'm absolutely delighted to be here, all revved up and ready to go.
So, Maxwell, you know, this is your first MQFF. We don't know much about you. This is. Can you please let the listener know who you are, where you've been, and what you bring to the table?
Well, I suppose I bring a very unconventional set of experiences and skills to the role of MQFF Executive Director. So I predominantly work in sports administration before coming over to the arts. So this is my first role in the arts. Mm. Previous to this role, I was Chief Executive Officer of Football Federation Victoria. Before that, Basketball ACT, where I was also CEO and had worked in various other roles in sports administration. But I decided to cross over to the arts because from a sociological perspective, I think I could see some analogies. And that is, you know, one of my mentors once told me sports administration is about building people up. If it's not about building people up, then what is it there for? And when you look at
it's there for selling tickets and making money.
Oh, well.
Oh, so there is a crossover to MQFS.
Absolutely, and we want lots of
people. Ding, ding,
ding. And we would like lots of people to buy lots of tickets, so we will get lots of money indeed. But when you look at the arts and the moving image, in many respects, it is about building people up. It gives people identity, it gives people meaning, people can relate to, you know, to seeing them, you know, their lives on screen. So, you know, when I saw those sort of analogies, I thought, great fit, just within a different context. But go back to your point, yeah, no, in sport, they sell tickets, we sell tickets, we had stadiums, we've got theatres now, you know, both have sponsors, both have government grants, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So,
so I can see, you know, it's pretty crystal to me.
Those parallels are there.
Am I making a stereotype about the audiences? I, you know, unfortunately the sports still do draw a male audience. Sadly for me, MQFF I sometimes find brings a male gay audience, and I'm always wanting to see more women attend not only the sports but also this festival. How do you go crossing over and engaging those audiences in the arts?
And firstly, you know, crossed over a point that's something very close to me, I suppose. When I was in sports administration, advocating for getting more women and girls, you know, playing, whether it be basketball when I was there in the ACT or whether it be football, you know, here in Victoria, is I think something that's extremely important there. And so our initiatives to try to engage a lot more women, for example, in sport, by making sure that there were change rooms and facilities and that we had environments that were welcoming for them was something that was quite important to us. And sometimes it's one of the smallest things that you might not think of that prevents people from actually participating. I know when I was in basketball and I was speaking to at the state CEO's conference, and we were talking about some of the research we'd done into why women weren't participating in sport, and it is Women's Football Week this week. Queensland actually reported that it was actually just that basketball jerseys look like male cuts, and that psychologically deterred a lot of girls and women from participating.
So it looks like something what, so small, male jersey cuts.
Male jersey cuts.
Like the cut of their outfit is rather masculine.
Also, rather masculine.
It probably would attract me to wear it. But, you know, that I'm not.
Oh, and me too.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have to be conscious about those things. So when we look at the MQFF there, our program, we try to keep it as diverse as possible so that we do reflect and engage with all colours of the rainbow, so to speak. In the end, that we do have a strong curated program of not just offerings for gay men, but also for lesbian women and, you know, transgender and all the rest of the colours.
We love that, Maxwell. We all come into Joy weekly, or some of us monthly.
yes, Conrad.
Because we love film, and Outtakes is, I'm going to say it, Joy's premier film show, flagship film show, the gayest film show in the world.
I think we've tested that theory many times.
All right, so that's the self-promotion over. I guess for us, you've created those, you've really explained well the parallels in between why you've taken the role and the similarities there. But what is it about film and queer film that you love?
Okay, look, the thing that I do love about queer film is, I suppose I, you know, sort of outline at the beginning, is how it can be a avenue where it actually helps people who are LGBTIQ to learn about themselves and connect with others within the community. As I was speaking to at an earlier interview some time back, you know, I'm Australian with half Greek and half Filipino heritage.
Yasu.
Thank
full
you.
Greek though.
And if I want to learn about, you know, my Greek heritage and how to be Greek, I've got my Greek side of the family. Mm. If I want to learn how to be Filipino, then there's the Filipino side of the family and to learn that culture there. But where do you go to learn to be LGBTIQ? Mm-hmm. And I think the Melbourne Queer Film Festival plays a very powerful and important role in that, you know, for whether it be for that young girl or boy who's coming out and being able to see, you know, their lives reflected on screen, whether it be making other friends. MQF is very community-like. You know, you'll see people at the Acme Bar that you might only ever just see there, but you can reconnect with them there. There's workshops and panels and many ways to connect with film and the moving image. And those sociological contributions and those elements, for me, is what I found the role very, you know, attractive to come to it. And, you know, for me, that's something that, you know, I do love about the MQFF, and that's what, you know, MQFF is for me.
Well, I think you're definitely singing to the choir here. I've got goosebumps listening to you, because that's exactly what we think and that's what we say.
And I think that's why the film festival is so relevant today and will remain relevant, you know, and endear to continue to be relevant into the future, because it will continue to play that role.
Mm. Now, we're obviously huge fans of MQFF, and the festival is so dear to us, and we, like you, understand its importance to our community. But as the executive director, how do you ensure that we can have not only an MQF this year, but one next year? Is it about creating relationships with stakeholders? Because we want our audiences to go. They must buy tickets and, you know, get off the couch and leave the cat at home. But what do you help bring to ensure that we have an MQFF next year and the year after that and a decade on?
When I look at my career path and the strong skill sets and experience that I do bring to MQFF, and that is I build businesses and organisations up. And when I look at MQFF, it's a terrific organisation with huge potential, and so much kudos and a shout out must go to everyone over all of the years who've contributed to making it, you know, the great organisation that it is today. And to take it then from there going forward, as your question alludes to, we're looking at expanding and growing in the times ahead. By way of example, further reaching out to regional Victoria, working closely with the Geelong Queer Film Festival, which it's inaugural offering this year.
Fantastic.
Bendigo Queer Film Festival. And we're also being quite ambitious to see if there's other areas out there in regional Victoria that we can expand to. We'll even be going interstate. So in April, we'll be taking the MQFF Roadshow out to Alice Springs.
Jeez. Oh, wow.
So we'll be even going to the outback, right up to the Northern Territory. And also commercializing and monetizing some of the offerings that we have throughout the year, and so that we're turning our focus, I suppose, from just being the main festival in March, you know, each year, to how do we remain involved and engaged right across the whole year. And that's how I think we'll be able to grow and further develop MQFF in the times ahead.
And that's the thing, it is important, you know, cinemas are not free, insurance isn't free, running these events isn't free. Some films need to be paid for. So I know some people kind of boo-hoo at corporate sponsorship, but it does keep the event running, that and the fabulous volunteers and the fabulous filmmakers. So I think it is important to, a yearly reach, just got that's me all great. The time.
It's like Christmas is coming all year round for us.
Love it.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. So watch at MQFF 365 or something.
Nice. So one of the roles that I noticed has come out recently is for, correct me if I'm wrong, a business executive, is that right?
Business manager, correct.
Business manager. So that builds on to your plan about extending the reach of the festival, extending the way that it engages with other communities and locations and things like that. But what is the, I guess, the purpose of creating a role that, you know, it sounds obvious, but what's your kind of strategy for bringing that role in?
So bringing that role in there, I suppose, was to try to further professionalise and commercialise and monetise the operations of the MQFF.
Right.
So assisting and supporting our efforts and myself as well in terms of getting more sponsors on board, in terms of exploring potential government grants and opportunities there, reaching out to some of those other communities and other places that we could bring our offering to, but also keeping in mind that despite the fact we might be a little bit more commercial in focus in the times ahead, we are still a community organisation.
Yeah.
And that's so very important. And I think I struck the right balance, or a very nice balance, in some of my previous roles. So, you know, Football Federation, yes, a professional outfit, but its stakeholders are predominantly grassroots.
Mm.
Basketball ACT, likewise, a professional outfit, but its stakeholders are also likewise grassroots. And if we can do that and professionalise MQFF a little bit more and continue our grassroots reach, if we can generate more resources and ability to reinvest in film and moving image, I reckon it would be absolutely terrific if we can start to even more invest in supporting filmmakers or directors and trying to build up the industry here in Australia.
Nice.
What I love about the AFL, and I think they've got correct, mind you, I'm not a fan of AFL, is they know how to build an audience young. They engage with the young stakeholders. They do footy clinics for young kids, and they put a lot of money and volunteering resources there. Now, I've already asked the question of, you know, Kathy and our ex-festival director Lisa in the Vox Pops earlier, but I'm a new parent and I want a bubs, you know, mums, dads, you know, gay parents bubs session coming. Now, they said that is something that could, it's kind of held up by censorship. That's the thing that's preventing something like that. So there's definitely a potential audience. Is there something in the future that we could see families be included and part of the festival?
Well, it's a terrific idea, and thank you for the suggestion. I couldn't agree with you more that we do need to ensure that we, you know, reach out to those who are up and coming, future, you know, audience members. So you make a very good suggestion that I'll take on notice and definitely have to explore.
There's lots of us. I have growing.
There's only one Joy.
Joy.org.au.
Outtakes here on Joy 94.9, the home of queer cinema, here with Conrad, Alan and Gina. We're now joined by the program manager for Melbourne Queer Film Festival, Spiro Ikonopoulos, to talk to us about his picks of the festival and some of the challenges in putting together the wonderful program for Melbourne Queer Film Festival 2018. So we've just spoken to Maxwell and he has given us some real insight into his vision about, you know, the festival and everything, which was great, really interesting, great interview, great guy. But what we really want to talk about here on Outtakes, sorry, I'm being facetious, is this wonderful program that you've put together.
Thank you.
A couple of films in there that, you know, you've managed to tack together.
There's a few in there, I've got to say, like maybe like about 120, but yeah. You know, shorts and features. But yeah, it's a very strong program this year. I'm really, really happy with how it's all kind of come together.
You really should be. 120 films. We hear each year, you know, it's a really hard process. There's so many people involved. Was this year any different? Did you have any kind of like, oh, this film's perfect, I don't need to do any more?
The decision, you know, usually you sort of agonize over things like opening and closing, but I have to admit this time around, when I saw the two films that are our opening and closing, in my mind,
straight
I was
away,
like, this is my wish list. This is what I would like to happen. And it's nice when it does happen. So that was kind of good.
So basically it's like colouring in around the edges. And now that's, you know, you get that bit. That's and the I'm hard terrible bit. And then you can just scribble in the middle.
Yeah, yeah, sort of. It's nice when you have those little pieces, and centerpiece as well, actually, where you have those kind of big pieces together. You can sort of start shaping things around it.
And was there a particular film that kind of helped you set a tone for it?
Look, maybe not so much tone, but I have to admit, I think Freak Show is such a great way to open a queer film festival. This is a movie that celebrates difference, that, you know, celebrates kind of standing out. And I think, you know, it's a quite interesting film to come at a time now when we're looking at things like, you know, mainstream acceptance, marriage equality, and it's nice to see a film like this, which kind of goes, you know, we still have to kind of, you know, represent, you know, the outcasts, the outsiders, and that's, you know, it's a really important thing to be able to celebrate, as does the documentary Queer Core Had a Punk Revolution, which really touches on those themes as well. So I think those things are still really important.
And I think the lead actor of Freak, we might know from, from the
Departure.
From The Departure.
Yes.
And wasn't he also in the film about Christopher Robin just recently?
Yes, and he's
played Christopher Robin.
Yeah, and he's in... Oh, actually, I haven't seen that. Sorry, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I do know the film, but I haven't seen it. But I know he was in Departure, which we screened back in 2016. And he's in a Netflix series at the moment, which is great if you haven't seen it, called End of the World.
Yeah.
Oh, so, which is very good.
Yeah. Directed by Trudy Styler.
Yes.
The Trudy Styler.
The Trudy Styler, Sting's partner. Apparently, she when I was at the screening, she was there, and she initially came on to the film as a producer, but as she got deeper and deeper into the process, she sort of decided she really wanted to take the film on herself. And, yeah, it's a really, you know, accomplished directorial debut. I don't think she's directed a feature before.
That's really interesting. It's got John McEnroe, which, Laverne Cox, and Bette Midler in cameos. No Sting?
Amazing. No Sting, which I was sitting there waiting for it to happen. But, you know, it was kind of good that he wasn't in it.
I was going to say, it could have detracted. That'll be in their next film. Exactly. That's great.
And, you know what, Gina and I, we're partnering up for...
We're dating.
Yes.
Opening night.
You know, I'm Gina's escort for opening night.
Or the other way around, perhaps.
But, and the Oscars show us, you know, again, time and time again, what strong queer films there are out there.
Absolutely.
Call Me By Your Name, Moonlight the year before. This year we've got things like BPM, which is phenomenal. I know I'm looking forward to that.
It's a great film.
What are your kind of... picks? What do you really want someone to go, okay, the poster might not sell it, but my goodness, you need to go see that film.
Well, look, you know, I think the festival's always a really great sort of, I think, social forum, community forum. People come together, they want to see some fun films, they want to have a laugh, a night out. And I think there's films in there that you could, I don't want to call them challenging because it makes it sound like they're difficult films, and they're definitely not that by any stretch of the imagination. They're still really entertaining movies, but I would say seek out Body Electric or I Dream in Another Language or The City of the Future. They're all really wonderful movies, and they're really interesting on their own, you know, in their own way, and what stories they're bringing to the queer table in terms of, you know, different stories that we might not know, and, you know, voices that we don't usually hear from. And so I kind of think that's what's interesting for me in terms of those films, essentially.
With your Bring It Back selections, I'm always intrigued when, you know, these films are both in their own right classics.
Yeah.
Great films. Why Desert Hearts and Prick Up Your Ears?
A lot of times I'm led by what's, Desert Hearts and Prick Up Your Ears have been recently restored. So it's a new print. So that was kind of the key factor. And I love retrospectives. And so I was always really keen to sort of have a real focus on it. In fact, we've just introduced a panel discussion about retrospective screenings, which you'll be able to see the information on our website about, which is really interesting. But, you know, I actually only saw Desert Hearts for the first time, you know, programming this festival, so only last year, which is shameful.
Don't know. I saw it last year after I admitted on air, and then I had a lesbian who I know from the studio go, how dare you.
Well, there you go.
Took back my membership card for Lesbian, and I had to watch it. And you know what? Okay, it's dated a bit, but
it's really good.
It's really good.
It's really, really solid film. Yeah. Wonderful drama. The you know, the two leads are great.
It's amazing. A film.
Were any lesbians hurt in the making of the film, though?
Look,
do we have any dead lesbians in that film?
I don't want to say anything. You need to see
we
the film.
Uh-huh. Exactly. We want people to go back and watch the film because we vox pop some of the people at the program launch, and we asked them what they wanted to see. I know some of the feedback you got last year was the whole dead lesbian trope that we see too often. In fact, one of the first people we speak to says, please give me happy, feel good lesbian kind of film. So I guess for my sisterhood, I'm asking you, Spiro, what's in this guide here? I mean, I've seen some of the trials, so I know.
Yeah.
But what can we, the audience that don't want to see anyone get hurt?
I mean, ironically, over the last few years, I actually think the lesbian films are the ones that are the most kind of, you know, upbeat, joyful, fun. Yeah. I think the main comedies we have this year are lesbian comedies, like The Feels, for example, which is a great
ensemble
comedy. I thought it was really fun. And, you know, Evan Maynard, I think it is, who plays regular Helen, I think, in the film, is fantastic. And her, if you don't know the plot of the film, it's about a group of friends who get together for a hen's night. And during a course of a very boozy, drug-addled night, it comes out that one of the brides-to-be has never had an orgasm.
This is actually selling out. I was on the app earlier. This
get
is
on
one
it.
Of the ones
We've got two screenings
out.
Of it, so get on it. Don't miss it.
But from memory, I think what I enjoyed most about that is you've got the little vignettes where people are facing the
That's
camera
explaining
their very first orgasm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
And Eva Maynard's, And Eva Maynard's sort of description of hers is literally worth the price of admission alone just to see that scene. It's very funny.
Now, Signature Move looks like another one. Beautifully culturally diverse.
Yes, a really interesting film. Really fun.
Really
fantastic. And it's got the lead actress in it, Fawzia Mirza, I think her name is. We had her in a short film here a couple of years back. She's a really big name on the queer film scene, comedy scene. She's great in it. And she plays a Canadian Pakistani lawyer who, sorry, not Canadian, she lives in Chicago, sorry, who lives with her mother and is not exactly out. And she meets a young Latina woman and they sort of begin a relationship, and it's about her not only coming out but also coming out as a wrestler as well.
The trailer's hilarious.
It's going to be very difficult.
It's difficult. When I watched the trailer, I was like, actually, I think this is going to tick the box of a lot of those, you know, sisters that were out there going, no more sad stuff. I mean, got to watch everything. You got to watch diverse content. But if this, that's what they want.
Having said that, and, you know, just I feel like it's like a trigger warning now.
caveat.
A Million Happy Nows is a great movie, and, you know, I don't want anyone to be scared off by this, but it is a bit of a tearjerker, but it's such a good film. And I was really sort of reluctant to watch it for a very long time, and I finally got around to it, and was really, really impressed by how good it was. It's a movie about a famous soap actress who basically has is at the height of her career, has a beautiful partner, wonderful home. And actually, in fact, the actress that plays her is a very famous soap actress as well in America, as is her girlfriend in the film. And she begins to experience some issues at work where she's forgetting her lines, and it turns out she's got early onset Alzheimer's. Mm. So the film's about her having to step out of the limelight and be looked after by her partner. And it's really moving, but really well done. And the two women in it are so great. I think it's a really good film, and I think people will really love it. So don't be scared of those emotions.
So
just buy an extra ticket to another comedy and pair it up with that.
It's okay.
Two tickets.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's
I think it's that thing too, though, that in this, we were talking about it on a show recently, in this political climate, I feel like people are reaching for things that are a lot more lighthearted, but they sometimes forget that the news and those serious stories and everything, we do need all of that as well.
Look,
we need to be in the present as much as we can enjoy.
Exactly.
Just, you know, taking some time out.
Oh, Conrad,
so a bit of balance.
I have cried after each episode of Queer Eye for the Straight Guys. I'm just
going to high five you on that one.
You're only human, doll.
Exactly.
Now, good for the soul.
We've heard from Gina.
We've got you covered.
In the program for her lesbian sisterhood. But, you know, I'm a middle-aged gay, and I want to know what's in it for me, you know?
Oh, God.
You know, I was just saying.
Besides, there's a lot in it for you.
I want to, you know, I'm just thinking, you know, I want to see people who have had who have been in long-term relationships, who might have kids, who've got grey hair, who've got wrinkles, who've got those real-life issues.
Let me tell you.
I want what's in it for me?
Jeez, anything else?
That's my shopping list.
I think you could start with a film called Paths, a German movie called Paths, which is a really wonderful film about a long-term relationship. It's about a gay couple who've been together for a long time. They have a now grown son who's basically leaving the family home. So it's kind of like an empty nest syndrome. It's about this couple, I guess, thinking about, you know, what is that next stage of their life? And the film sort of comes back and forth from when they first met. Their meeting's really beautiful until, you know, later parts in their life. And it's interesting, again, when I was watching it and obviously the whole marriage equality debate was going on, I thought it's so funny that this is a question that I guess the general population of Australia are thinking about, you know, what is a gay relationship? You know, whereas we've been living them and explore, you know, like forever. And, you know, and Paths is another example of that, where this is a film about a long-term one. And we know what a family is and what relationships are. And we've been making movies about them for a long time too. And so Paths is a really great movie. I'd really recommend that.
And what can you tell me about an ideal home or ideal home?
Oh, Ideal Home is hilarious. It stars Steve Coogan and Paul Rudd, who play a long-term couple and Steve Coogan's plays an actor in it.
Yeah.
And very unexpectedly, a child appears at their doorsteps, who's the grandson of Steve Coogan, of a kid he had a long time ago. And so they're suddenly forced to become, you know, parents, and they're really not prepared for it, let me tell you. It's really funny. It's hilarious. In fact, you know, I think Steve Coogan and Paul Rudd make a really great couple, surprisingly. Yeah. So it's a lot of fun. And yeah, I actually laughed quite a lot during this film. I think it's really funny.
Joy to the world. joy.org.au.
It's Outtakes here on Joy 94.9 with Gina, Alan and Conrad, and we're speaking with Spiro, the program manager for Melbourne Queer Film Festival, about the best of the fest for 2018. So every year I'm all about the documentaries.
Uh-huh.
I get very excited because I love a good documentary, and some of the best films I've ever seen at MIFF or MQFF are always documentaries, and I think you've outdone yourself with the program this year.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to quite a few, but one in particular I'm interested about is 100 Men.
Yeah.
Can you give us a little bit of a background on that and how it came to your attention?
Yeah, it's a really... it was on a Frameline, and I thank you for saying about the doc, because I always love the documentary sections at any film festival, and I think this year, like, all of them are so strong and have their own story to tell.
Mm.
100 Men is a really interesting film by a Kiwi filmmaker called Paul Ormeland, who's going to be here actually for the screening, which is really exciting.
Okay.
And it's about this filmmaker revisiting, you know, his past, you know, conquest. I don't know how to sort of how to say it nicely, really, but and it's sort of, but I think what's interesting about it, it becomes like a document about queer life, and it's so, because it spans over a long time.
So this is like a 100 past sexual encounters kind of thing. Yeah. I mean,
he's going through the black book.
Literally.
I mean, he actually kept their names.
That's what I found really amazing, actually, because I started to think myself, like, what? Who would I contact? This is getting really awkward.
What was his last name?
What was their name?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's kind of, but I think what I really like what he's done with the documentary, you know, is that
I'm sensing something here. I mean, like, who can possibly remember 100 for a start? I mean, you know, I'm just a little bit skeptical, you know.
Yeah,
is this an agony
documentary?
Aunt?
Watch the documentary,
you know, Alan. Exactly. You like a spreadsheet? Maybe he did too.
So, yeah, I don't know.
Can you tell us a bit more about the documentary Women on Fire? Because this one is standing. This one is drawing me to it.
Yeah, look, Women on Fire is also a really great documentary about Brooke Gunnan, I think the character's name is, and Brooke is a one of the first transgender fire people
in New York.
Yeah, and what's interesting about it is New York's the interesting one, because Brooke comes from a long line of firefighters in the family. So it's a kind of a family sort of tradition, essentially. Mm. You know, her grandfather was one, her father. And when Brooke was first in the department, Brooke was in there as a gay man. So initially, you know, Brooke's challenge was, A, coming out as a gay man in a very kind of masculine sort of environment, and then coming out as a trans woman in this environment. So it's a really interesting story, and she's a really fascinating.
So is she a straight trans woman now, or is she a lesbian?
She is a straight trans woman. So the documentary is actually sort of set on the eve of her wedding, from memory. Oh, wow. I think actually,
yeah,
it's
really amazing.
Yeah, it's really great. I really recommend that one. It's interesting.
Now, Mr. Gay Syria, another documentary, is already sold out.
Yes,
we're telling people.
Oh my god,
it's
I was so happy
I
about
love
that.
Seeing,
yeah,
that's exciting.
There's always two films that really take me by surprise in terms of how popular they are, and Mr. Gay Syria, which I love. Loved and was not sure how it was going to go. The fact that it sold out, it's like I'm, you know, I want to hug everyone that bought a ticket.
Because isn't that great? We all say we want to see things, you know, depending on what's happening in the world, we want to see things we're comfortable with. But this goes to show the things that are currently selling out, it's showing that people want to see things that outside of themselves and out, you know, a broader spectrum of the community. Yeah. That's what excites us when we see that sort of result.
And it's a very timely documentary about refugees. And I think it's a really interesting film that looks at something that, you know, I guess we kind of think of as a trivial thing, like beauty pageants. But in the documentary, as you watch it, you see this is something that's used for, you know, a really potent political message. So it's a really good documentary.
We're all about representation here at Outtakes. We talk about it a lot.
Yes.
not too much.
No.
Just enough. And I think you've done a really great job at covering, you know, the full spectrum of our very bright and colourful community. You've already given us kind of a good selection, a good pick. But what's that one film that you think is one that kind of tells a story that just has not been told before that we should check out?
Well, I would maybe for that one, I would kind of maybe point out City of the Future.
Mm-hmm.
City of Future is a Brazilian film about, I mean, the story around it is about a relocation of a community because of a dam project. And this community is relocated with the promise of going to somewhere which is going to be amazing, and it's not. And so they're in this really, this environment that just does not kind of work for them. But what this film is about two young teachers, queer teachers who are a couple, and they sort of form a friendship with the third female bisexual friend of theirs, and they decide to have a family. So the interesting thing about this film is the idea that in these environments you can be creating your own sort of utopia, your own sort of form of what a family looks like, your own future. And I think it's kind of a really interesting film that's sort of you know, a look forward, I suppose. And I really liked it. I think it's a really good film.
Sounds great.
I've definitely got a shout out, of course, to the Australian Shorts.
Oh,
we recommend that people buy tickets early. This always sells out year after year.
This is
our future feature, you know, TV filmmakers. So I know I'm always looking forward to seeing the Australian Shorts. We need to be supporting our own local filmmakers, which MQFF does. You guys do filmmaking workshops.
Yes.
To engage new people in this medium. Yeah. So that's great.
I mean, I love the Australian Shorts. And I mean, you know, we haven't even talked about the two Australian Features screening this year. And, you know, that's the thing where some of these filmmakers are, you know, Angie Black, for example, who did the Five Provocations, screened two of her student shorts at one of the earliest incarnations of the Melbourne Queer Film Festival back in 1991. So I think it's so cool that, you know, her feature debut is making its world premiere here. And
amazing.
Five Provocations was the first session that sold out, like, with a day. So we had to move it into a bigger cinema. It's nearly sold out again. So I think the audience here does love Australian queer content, and it makes me really happy. And for me as well, as a programmer, it's always... That's kind of the biggest kick I get, sort of sitting there or standing on the stage with an Australian filmmaker who's presenting, you know, their film to everyone for the first time. And it sort of makes the job really worthwhile.
Well, it sounds like you kind of take this personally. I mean, Does this mean that some of the films that don't sell very well, you might go, personally.
All my children. You know,
120 of them.
120 of them.
You think
very busy.
100 men is hard work.
Exactly.
120
films. Yeah, and I've kept notes.
Yeah.
Why did he get just go one more and go for 101 men? You know, it's always 101. It's 101
maybe that's
days,
as many,
101 Dalmatians.
Maybe that's as many as he could get.
You know,
say
like
yes.
It's always a year and a day. It should have been 101.
So, see the documentary. That's all I'm saying.
So caught up on
a missed opportunity.
So caught up on a small detail there.
So many pages were in his book.
Yeah, anyway. Exactly. Spiro, congratulations on putting together a wonderful festival. We're very excited to come along and see all the films. I just wanted to ask you about, just to finish up, you said at the end of your little blurb in the program guide, you said, don't take my word for it. Dive in and explore. You'll be queerer for it. Yeah. What makes you queerer?
Look, I just think we can never be queer enough. I mean,
totally.
You know, let's
preach.
Absolutely. Let's go there.
Well, you know what I can say is I can say BPM definitely made me queerer.
Love
for
it.
Sure.
I think BPM, what I loved about it was that it absolutely, I think what's great about that film is that it sort of presents these incredible sort of look at the politics behind ACT UP. But what it reminds you as well is that in between that, there was sex, there was partying, there was dancing, there was love and passion. And I think it sort of says that these movements are built on these really, I guess, this energetic movement. And I think that's so potent. And I love that film for it. And I think it doesn't.
That describes the festival.
It's the festival. Yeah. That's opening night alone.
I know.
Well,
that's the thing. Last year, opening night was very controversial. There was discussion the entire
evening. Look, I do love some controversy.
Don't we all?
You know? So.
That was I Am Michael.
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
It was. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to seeing what the opening night party is when everyone's comparing notes on. Bette Midler's cocktails. Is
exactly.
That the thing?
Yeah, look, she's a booze hound, you know.
So make sure you say thank you to the volunteers, but also thank you to Spiro and the wonderful team at MQFF. Every time you go and see a film, say thanks for bringing it to our little backyard.
Oh, thanks.
Australia's only LGBTI radio station, Joy.
The Melbourne Queer Film Festival is on from March 15 to 26. Tickets are on sale now at mqff.com.au. Don't miss out. Tons of sessions are selling very, very quickly. So get on there now. Get the program guide. They're proudly different and they're rated Q for queer. It's the Melbourne Queer Film Festival. We're all looking forward to it. The opening night film is Freak Show. It looks like a fantastic film. And as Spiro said, it's got a lot of great cameos in it. And something really great to kick off Melbourne's Queer Film Festival for 2018. Many thanks to our special guests, Spiro and Maxwell from Melbourne Queer Film Festival. To finish up, here is the trailer for opening night film Freak Show. Coming up next is Well, Well, Well. You've been listening to Outtakes here on Joy 94.9.
You cannot go to your first day of school like that. You're in the red states now.
Go Griffins!
I've got to prepare you for this world.
Be a lamb and make your muff another drinky.
You know, son, the nail that sticks out gets hammered down.
I am being terrorized out there all day, every day.
Aren't you being overly dramatic?
Normally, I would take that as a compliment.
I just wanted to let you know that I think you're amazing.
That didn't even startle you.
I certainly did not mean to make that sound.
You're not supposed to feel.
You're supposed to be a man and do.
Your situation at school might get a whole lot better. Just tone it down a little.
Why did you stop wearing blue jeans?
I'm compromising myself for reasons I don't even understand.
I mean, you're not getting beamed in the head as much anymore.
What am I going to do with you?
I am announcing my candidacy for homecoming queen!
How do you want to be identified? Gay, straight, transgender?
Gender obliviator?
Freak!
Well, I was going to reclaim it as my own anyway.
Are you serious?
You do what you want, but from now on, you're on your own. We dream away!
This is a simple case of decency versus depravity.
If life kicks you,
you just kick higher!
You can call me a freak, okay. You're all freaks, too. Is that what being a teenager is all about?
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
here comes Billy Bloom!
there for?
It's for free, you freak.
Hit him to the left. Hit him to the left. Stand up, sit down, fight, fight, fight.
Joy to the world. joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.